This is Look West, a podcast from California's Assembly Democrats.
Welcome back to Look West, the podcast that shines a light on how California is leading the way. I'm your host for today, Mahalia LeClaire, and I'm thrilled to be here. Today, we're diving into a critical topic that affects every Californian, voting. While some states are making it harder to vote, California is working hard to ensure everyone has a voice in our democracy. Our guest today is someone at the forefront of protecting that right, Assemblymember Gail Pellerin, chair of the Assembly Elections Committee. She's here to talk about the steps California is taking to make sure every vote is counted and what more needs to be done. Gail, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start at the beginning. Do you remember the first time you voted? And what was that like for you?
I actually remember when I registered. So my parents were very conservative, and my dad actually did not believe women should go to college. He felt like we should just get married and have babies and be home. And I had it in me that I wanted to go to college. And I remember turning 18, and my dad said, okay, it's time for you to register, and had the voter registration card. And I was interested in the political parties because I hadn't heard about all of them. And he insisted that I register Republican. And so I did. And then I basically ran off to college because they did not support that decision, and packed up everything I owned in the back of my Datsun pickup and drove to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And that's where I found my voice. I connected with people, learned about issues, learned about the political process. And 2 years later, I re-registered as a Democrat, and I've been a registered Democrat ever since.
All right. So was voting something that was emphasized for you growing up? You said your father was Republican and had you register. Was that something that was important to your family?
Not really. But it was something that I got interested in political advocacy. One thing that I felt very strongly about was women's reproductive rights. And I did a lot of work with Planned Parenthood and did escorts. And I became the dorm expert on how to go into the health services department there on campus to get birth control and make sure you're protected if you're having intercourse with people. And so I became an expert on how to navigate that whole system. So people from all over my dorm and other dorms would come to me and ask questions about, like, what was it like? What happened? What did they say? Because it's a little scary and you don't want to be judged, but you want to be able to control and take care of your body. So that was something I felt very strongly about at an early age.
That's awesome. So you and your fellow Assembly Democrats have been hard at work passing new laws to make voting more accessible, especially since the pandemic. Why has that become such a priority for you?
Well, so I spent 27 and a half years as the chief elections official in Santa Cruz County. So voting and removing barriers and making sure every vote counts and everyone has access to the ballot is something that I feel very strongly about, and have done a lot of innovative changes during the course of my county clerk tenure, where I think we were one of the first counties to start weekend voting, for example, and getting out into the schools and educating students about the importance of civic engagement. And we also had a lot of outreach programs with senior convalescent homes where people were in a place that they didn't have a lot of mobility, and making sure that they had access to the ballot. And then we extended our programs into the jail system to make sure that the folks in jail knew what their rights were about voting. So that's always been something very near and dear to my heart and something I feel very passionately about. And one of the last things I did before I left the county clerk's office was we got some grant money in, and I was able to purchase a vote mobile. So think taco truck, but instead of tacos, we had ballots. And we were able to take that vote mobile throughout the county in front of like a farmer's market or a homeless encampment, or up at the summit where they don't have a lot of access to voting. And as long as we can get a signal with our cradle point, we were able to issue ballots and collect ballots as well. So that was a great new program that I was able to implement before I left.
To follow up on that, one of the biggest changes we've seen in recent years is the rise of mail-in voting.
Right.
How crucial is mail-in voting to the democratic process, especially here in California?
Yeah, so we actually went all mail ballot during the pandemic, and counties started doing what was the the vote center concept, where you have more ways and days to vote. So 10 days before an election, you open up various voting locations, and then you up that number of locations the 4 days prior to an election. I always felt having as many options available to people is really the way to go. So I really support that concept. But there are some counties still that do the traditional polling site, even though we still mail ballots to every voter. They still have a neighborhood polling site that they could get to if they need a second ballot or need assistance or want to vote on the accessible voting unit there as well. So lots of options for voters, and there's just no excuse not to vote. It is not only your right as a citizen, but it's also your responsibility. And I think we need to change the conversation around voting, because there's nothing that frustrates me more than to be driving around on election day to have the news media reporting, oh, turnout's low, there's nothing on the ballot, people aren't, you know, engaged and excited. Every election is exciting, and every election there's something on the ballot that impacts you. It impacts your pocketbook. It impacts your school or your water district or your neighborhood. So it's, you know, the top of the ticket's always very exciting and brings out a lot of interest in voters, but the bottom of the ticket is actually the stuff that impacts you more and I think deserves equal attention.
Yeah, I remember when I first started voting, I had to learn how to look up my voting location.
Yeah.
And if you went to the wrong spot, it was kind of a whole headache trying to figure it out. And so it's definitely changed. Now I can go drop off my ballot somewhere,
right.
You know, right next to my work. I don't have to take time off.
So. And California was the first to implement provisional voting. And provisional voting was a situation where a voter walks into your polling location. They're not on the alpha index. But rather than turning them away and saying you can't vote, which is something we would never say to anybody, everyone's always allowed to vote, but you vote and you put it in a pink envelope. That's what we had. And then that got set aside. And then during the canvas, we researched to see whether, oh, they were just one precinct over, or if they voted a different ballot type than they were eligible, we would remake it to their correct ballot type. But California was really the innovator around ensuring that every voter showing up to vote could indeed vote.
So our podcast tends to reach a younger audience, and we know that younger voters often have lower turnout rates compared to other groups. Why do you think that is, and what do you believe needs to be done to engage younger voters more effectively?
Trusted messengers. So when I go in and talk to university students about the importance of voting, it plants the seeds, but it really has to be younger people like you talking to voters, talking to them about the importance of voting, talking to them about why voting matters, and drawing those correlations. Because I remember talking to young women, my daughter's 26 now, and she was a campus voter registration outreach coordinator. So it was her job to be on campus registering voters and encouraging people to get out and vote. And I think that was a really good program to have, because it's a fellow student talking to you about this is why I'm registered and this is why I'm voting. And drawing those connections between if you register and you vote, and if you elect people that are responsible for appointing judges, you know, to our Supreme Court, it impacts the rulings that they're going to make. And as we've seen in the last few years with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, that was detrimental to women at half of our states. And we could change that. We can change that by being more engaged and voting and having our voices heard.
So it sounds like you've really passed down your passion for voting to your own children.
Yes.
And so your own household is a
100% voter turnout every election. And, you know, and I promote that with other families as well and other businesses. We would talk about how our office had 100% voter turnout. We encourage people register and vote. Of course, we were the elections office, so it made sense. But, you know, we also challenge our other fellow departments, our sheriff's department, our district attorney's office, our Department of Education. We have religious institutions in Santa Cruz County. Temple Beth El promotes voting to their congregation and talks about it and makes sure people have access to register and know if they have any questions, who to talk to, and get the right information. And their turnout's like in the, you know, high 90%, you know, as far as getting people out to vote. And, you know, if our percentage of voting were a grade on a test, we'd be failing in most elections. And it just, really irritates me. I'm not satisfied with a 60% turnout. You know, 60% is a C, right? Or D even. You know, so it's like we want to get our turnouts into the 80, 90%. And there's really no excuse not to vote because it's so easy now where that ballot just gets mailed to you. You have options to go to a voting center. You can even do a remote accessible vote by mail ballot. So I had a friend of mine who found herself on a Friday having to leave suddenly to go take care of her mom in Ohio. Election day was Tuesday. She flew off without her ballot. Well, we were able to get her a remote accessible vote by mail ballot she could access on a computer, vote, print it out, and then mail it back to the county elections office. So there's always an option. So don't ever give up.
So if one of our listeners has never voted before, what would you tell them for how to get started?
Well, you got to register to vote. You got to sign up. And if you've gone to DMV to get a driver's license, you can register then. If you're 16, you end up in a pre-registration mode. And then when you turn 18, you're automatically registered. It's important to know what political party you want to affiliate with or no party. And the only time no party preference impacts your ballot is in a presidential primary. Because in a presidential primary, it's a closed primary. So only Democrats vote for Democratic candidates. Republicans vote for Republican candidates. And if you're no party preference, you get a ballot without the office of president on it. Unless the political party has authorized you to cross over and vote their party's ballot. So typically, the Democrats allow it. Libertarian Party has allowed it. And the American Independent Party has allowed it. I think the Republican Party allowed it once. So you have to know the rules. But you could always, if you're in a presidential primary coming up and you really want to vote for that Republican candidate, you got to register Republican. And now in California, you can actually do same-day registration. So you don't have to decide those 29 days before or 15 days before. You can actually show up on election day and say, hey, I want to re-register and I want to vote that party's ballot. And again, it's only in a presidential primary where that's an issue. Otherwise, all the other elections is the same ballot.
So in recent years, we've heard a lot of talk about voter fraud. And do you feel that this is an issue in California and across the nation?
Well, let me just say California elections officials are incredibly thorough and do their due diligence after every single election to determine if there's any signs of fraud. In my tenure as a county clerk, there was one case that we actually brought to the district attorney. It is so extremely rare. It is something, and we do check for it. We do monitor it. We're watching it constantly. And we do take action whenever there's something that is not right. And I think one statistic showed that you can get hit by lightning twice before, you know, voter fraud is at the same level of a percentage of happening. So it's just not something that we're seeing. People are not impersonating voters coming into polling sites. They're not getting ballots and collecting them and voting them and signing names because we are checking that signature. And the signature must compare to your signature on file. We just don't see it happening in the numbers that people are saying that they're seeing it.
I want to highlight two key bills of yours that have recently cleared the legislature. Let's start with AB 1784, which deals with multiple candidacies. Can you explain what this bill does and why it's necessary?
Sure. So we had a colleague in the state assembly who was had filed for office to run for state assembly. And then the congressional seat opened up in his jurisdiction. And he decided he wanted to run for that. So when he went into the county office of elections, they said that he could not withdraw from the assembly seat to run for Congress. But he took out papers for Congress. And there was always a question, you know, that you're not supposed to be able to run for two conflicting offices on the same ballot. So it went to court and the judge determined that the law was not clear. So that prompted my attention. I said, well, let's make it clear. So I did this piece of legislation that was signed into law that makes it very clear that in that situation, he could come in, withdraw from the assembly seat, and file for the congressional seat so he's on the ballot only once.
The second bill, AB 2839, takes on the issue of disinformation, particularly through deepfakes. Can you walk us through what this law does and why it's such a crucial step forward?
So AI has gotten so good, and that we need to put guardrails around it, especially when it comes to the integrity of our elections. So this bill, I worked with the California Initiative on Technology and Democracy to work with, you know, First Amendment experts and lawyers to draft it perfectly so, to basically ban anything that's digitally created and materially deceptive prior to an election and after an election. So if it's a robocall, a video, a mail piece that is impact that shows an election official, an elected official, a candidate, or a voting equipment, you know, saying or doing something that it has not said or done, then that is a violation. And we also require anything that's put out as parody or satire has to be labeled in the video that this is parody and not and digitally created. So it's important for people to be aware of what they're seeing and hearing out in this atmosphere of social media and calls coming into your phone or text messages or images you're seeing. And if something doesn't seem right, you know, question it and call into the Secretary of State's office or your local elections office to verify that information. But we want to make sure that what people are seeing, hearing, reading around an election is true and accurate information. And this desire to impact an election through spreading lies and deceit are not new, but it's a lot easier to transmit those lies and deceit with the social media platforms that we have now. And the fact that AI has gotten so good, everybody has access to it and can create these really compelling videos and images that are just not true. So we got to put the guardrails around it and protect our democracy and make sure that voters are aware.
That's such an important issue, especially in today's media landscape. What additional protections or changes do you think California still needs to ensure voting remains safe and easy?
Yeah, well, you know, improving that participation gap, because we have millions of voters who are not registered, and we want to make sure that they're aware of how to register and how to cast that ballot. When I go out and talk to folks about voting, voting is not a test. You do not have to vote on every single issue. It's best to be informed and to look at groups or organizations and where they stand on issues. And those are the groups or organizations you align with. And then that helps you in determining how you want to vote. But, you know, it's important to, like I said, it's not only your right, but it's also your responsibility. And I have a very high expectation when media would contact me and say, what do you expect the turnout's going to be in Santa Cruz County? I would come out with 100%. Because I expect every registered voter to turn out and vote, because there's really no excuse not to.
So the premise of this podcast is that other states can look west to California for leadership. Do you think California is a leader when it comes to elections and voting? And how can other states learn from what we're doing here?
Well, 100%. I think as goes California, as goes the nation is very true here. Like I said, California was first to do provisional voting, expanding voting hours and days, and other states have also been very innovative as well. Colorado was also one of the first states to do the vote center concept, and you know, but I think that California really does extremely good work to remove barriers to voting and make sure that there's equity in the state of California. And when I first got elected and came into Sacramento of January 2023. I was on the phone with a colleague of mine, Kathy Darling Allen, Shasta County's Registrar of Voters, and she was telling me how her board of supervisors had just thrown out their voting system and told them that they had to go to a hand-counted paper ballot system. That is not auditable. It's not accessible. It's not accurate. I mean, I've done many, many recounts in my life. It takes a lot of time. It's very tedious, extremely focused kind of work. And it's important to do during your canvass, but not as your main system of voting and tallying votes. So we were talking about, like, we got to do something about that. And it dawned on me, hey, wait a minute, I'm a legislator. I can do a piece of legislation. So I wrote a bill that night to basically require all counties in the state of California to use a state-certified, federally qualified voting system in their elections. So that bill, AB 969, got through the legislature. We put an urgency in it. It was passed and signed by the governor, and it impacted their November 2023 election. And then what was happening was other surrounding counties were also thinking about going the same way. And it would have just created chaos with getting vote tallies on time, especially in a large statewide election with the president of the United States being on the ballot.
What would you tell a listener who might be on the fence about voting?
You know, I think that it's important to look at voting as a responsibility, and you don't have to like everything on the ballot. You don't have to know about everything on the ballot. Again, it's not a test. If there's just one or two issues that you feel strongly about, vote on those one or two issues and call it a day. It's an easy thing to do. It's something that can be done at home now. And like you said, you could just drop it off in a any kind of ballot drop box or voting location, or and postage is paid now. I know a lot of young people, you know, my kids especially, they didn't know where to put a stamp on an envelope, you know, because we're kind of getting away from that. Postage is paid. You don't have to go hunt around for a stamp. You can just drop it in the mailbox and return it. And just it's something that is just so necessary for people to be involved with and know that your vote for those offices and that those candidates, it's not just about them. It's really about who they bring, what kind of team they bring, what are their values, what are their overall mission, what are their overall desires, what are they going to do to make your life better, you know? And that just because you vote for that one person doesn't mean that that's the end of the story, you know, because it's really the whole team and vision that they bring to that position that is important to be looking at. And these issues impact everybody, especially for, you know, a young person. This is your education. This is your future. This is your rights as an individual of control over your body or where you can, you know, go and who you can marry. And these are really life-changing issues that we need to be looking at. And it's very impactful.
So get out and vote.
Get out and vote. No excuse. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Gail, for sharing your insights and all the work you're doing to protect the vote. It's clear that California is committed to making sure every voice is heard, and we appreciate your leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and check out more of our conversations with California's leaders on Look West.
I'm Mahalia LeClaire. Until next time, remember, your vote is your voice.
The Look West podcast is produced by the DCO Pod Squad for the California Assembly Democrats. Please like, subscribe, and share this episode. When you think of California politics, remember to look west.